Welcome back to Canucks Talk, free agency edition here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And as we predicted, we've figured out the secret here. Every time we go to break, the Canucks announce another signing or a series of signings. And in this case, it is Derek Forbort, officially announced by the team, 1 year, $1.5 million deal.
So it's really a three-for-two trade with the Boston Bruins.
Yes. Yeah, they're just
Zadorov and
players.
Lindholm go to Boston. Heinen,
DeBrusk, and Forbort.
Now, the Forbort deal might be my favorite of the day, even though, you know, I think there's some risk in him compounding an issue for this Canucks team in terms of moving the puck, in terms of their ability to generate shots, right? I do worry a little bit. Again, I thought Zadorov had just such a huge impact on this lineup when he came, in part because of the secondary puck moving that he brought, right? And if you're not going to add another righty to the mix who can get the puck moving, I do worry a little bit about whether or not this Canucks team's going to have enough of that puck moving for those moments when Hughes, Hronek aren't on the ice together, right? So, but 1.5 for 1 year in a world where Edmondson's going for nearly 4x4, where Ian Cole's getting 3.1. I mean, that's fantastic, right? Like the Canucks were looking to play in a lower tier of the market on defense than what the market really was going to bear for most of the 4-5 options. And I think Forbort is a 4-5 option, especially given just his defensive acumen, size, physicality. Like, I think he's a really good fit at a really fair price point. And I think that's sort of where we get to, right? Like, Forbort also was a first guy over the boards type penalty killer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Forbort, Myers, Bluger, and Heinen as sort of your PK1 now, Heinen or Joshua. That makes sense to me, right? You've got DeBrusk as an option for PK2. You've got Joshua and Heinen, right? I mean, there's an element to which all of this makes a lot of sense in your mind's eye and is consistent with something that this team has prioritized pretty consistently throughout the Rutherford Alvin regime, which is just this obsessive focus on fit.
Yep.
Right? So you bring in DeBrusk, and I think it's a complicated deal because fundamentally, like, the cap hit is good. The bet is straightforward. The player is relatively young, mitigating the risk somewhat of the length.
Yeah.
You can understand why the club would feel like this was the right guy and the guy to overpay for, given the traits, given the speed, given the physicality, given the defensive acumen. Kiefer Sherwood, Danton Heinen all sort of fit that mix. We're talking about wingers that can move, wingers that are defensively responsible. In DeBrusk and Kiefer Sherwood, wingers that hit a lot, right? All of that is consistent with so much of what we've talked about Vancouver's reliance on speed on the wall, and then with Forbort, you know, their reliance on that size on the back end and how they've made those two things work in combination with, like, Quinn Hughes's ability to dominate puck possession and a team level discipline about making safe plays as opposed to safe plays designed to help this team control the game in the offensive zone. Sometimes at the expense of generating scoring chances, but effectively defending, you know, 150 feet from your own net, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Vancouver's offensive game is in, or their play with the puck is actually done in service of their defensive game, their elite defensive results. All of this makes so much sense, is so thoughtful in terms of how this team wants to go about winning games, consistent with so much of what we saw last year. I think the reason my reaction on DeBrusk is a little bit mixed, I suppose, is just that I still do think that level up in terms of a dynamic creator is kind of what I was looking for. And I think DeBrusk's a little bit more straight line, a little bit more predictable. But I also think he can be super productive with Miller and Pettersson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that fit makes a ton of sense to me. No matter whether he's taking Pew Suter's role or whether or not he is, you know, the duo player, the pair
for Pettersson.
So, yeah. But consistent with how this, the overall MO of this front office, right? Try to keep things as locked down as you can. Announce your own news. You know, overpay only for the guys who are at the right stage of their career, at the right age, with the right skill set, with the bet big, but only bet big on players at the right stage of their career who you think are a perfect fit for what you need, right? And prioritize fit and raise your floor above all else, right? Like all of these moves dovetail nicely with what's emerged as sort of the driving philosophy of this Alvin Rutherford era. And so zooming out, you know, I think you can look sort of across the board here and Heinen's 2 years, Sherwood's 2 years, Forbort's 1 year. All of that's pretty consistent.
Dollywell's going to hate that. Hates those 1 year deals. Why would you want flexibility next summer? Like, I don't know.
All of that's pretty consistent, right? With some of what we saw from this team and that worked so well for this team last mm-hmm. summer, with the exception of DeBrusk, who's the bigger swing, the guy who's at the right age and stage where you don't worry too much about overpaying. You worry about getting the right player, the right fit for your team. And so a lot of this makes sense now that we've sort of seen it play out. And I think a lot of it is far more responsible, right? Far more conservative, cautious, well-calibrated than so many of the other moves we're seeing
around the league
across the NHL marketplace. So look, I don't know that you're going to look at this free agent class and say it's like the home run that Canucks fans hoped for, or even that maybe Canucks management hoped for. But I think you can say they did good work. I think you can say they did good work. Was it the type of offseason or are these the type of moves so far where the Canucks are going to like significantly separate themselves from the LA Kings in terms of the gambling odds and get closer to Edmonton and Vegas as like a favorite in the Pacific or a Stanley Cup favorite? Probably not during the offseason. I think that would require the DeBrusk bet to hit, you know, yep. like the Hronek bet hit, right? To sort of a 90th percentile or better sort of clip in terms of him really reinventing Vancouver's top six. It's possible, but I don't think people will price that in as sort of something they expect when betting on it. But, you know, I do think the Canucks have made a series of moves where they've managed to at least maintain a good shot at being as good as they were this season as they were last year. And I think they've done it without breaking the bank on older or riskier players.
I think that's the key, is that they have, that's a good way to phrase it, right? Like, they're going to be competitive for a playoff spot. With the roster they have right now, you should go in expecting them to make the playoffs, but they've also kept their powder dry, at least so far. We'll see what else materializes today throughout the rest of free agency. They've kept their powder dry both in terms of future assets and cap flexibility to go make a big ad if it becomes available. Now, there's no guarantee that it'll become available, right? There's no guarantee that, you know, player X, who has that creativity factor you're talking about, will eventually hit the market, but at least they haven't closed that off as a possibility. They've done enough, as you said, to kind of solidify the floor, address team needs, maybe bring in a little bit of upside with Jake DeBrusk, which we can talk about. But they've also left other paths open to them improving between now and when the playoffs start. Between now and when the season starts, and between when the season starts and when the playoffs start, right? And so I think threading that needle of not hamstringing your team's ability to compete for the playoffs, right? Not signing anyone, and then you're really worried. Bringing in some guys that can help you get there while also keeping paths open to improve the team, that's important. Now, that's only half the job, because you have to go out and improve the team further to take that next step from where it is today. But at least they've left those possibilities open going forward. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Trey, the Gulf Island ferry worker, texts in, with the Canucks' lack of defensive signings. What was that, Dom?
The Canucks have made a minor move. I don't know if they've announced it. I'd imagine they announced it, right, Dom? Or Rick Dollywell has it. Okay, Rick Dollywell is reporting that the Canucks are doing a minor deal with Tucson Roadrunners center Nathan Smith, who played for the Arizona Coyotes for a couple of years. Now, this is a right-handed centerman, so that's an interesting one. Mm. I think the club, the club knew that they needed a right-handed centerman, but I didn't think it would be something they'd prioritize, you know, certainly not at, at significant expense at this point. Smith's not a faceoff winner, 40% career rate in the NHL. So I don't think that is like necessarily the, we have a right-handed centerman option.
No.
I think this is a depth move. We'll see if it's sort of a one-year, two-way deal, kind of in line with what they've done with Phil DiGiuseppe and Jet Wu and company, you know, like a 200, 250, 300K valuation in the American League and a league minimum salary up top. That's been sort of a template that they've set. Well, Lannan matches that, on and on. There's a lot of Canucks depth forwards that sort of fit that basic description. But, you know, an interesting body, an interesting player. Had a pretty successful collegiate career and is still young, 25, right? So this is a Group 6 UFA, hails from Tampa, Florida, and, you know,
31 points in 60 AHL games last year, right? 6 foot, right shot center. So, you know, probably an Abbotsford targeted signing, but at least brings out some depth and a chance to figure into the roster.
And a fourth line option, right? Yep. A fourth line option. Look, I like when teams take shots at Group 6 guys. I like when teams take shots at guys that were bought out. Like, I like value shots generally. I think it makes sense for the Canucks to take a couple. I'd really like to see them take one in terms of a puck-moving defender.
Yes.
That's still sort of the thing that I look at and think, man, I really think this team could use that. So we'll sort of see where this develops, but an interesting little gamble for the Canucks signing Nate Smith.
Well, and
Nathan Smith. What did I call him? Nate Smith.
Nate Smith. Like, Nate Schmidt.
Like,
I don't think he's coming back.
No. I would be surprised.
On the puck-moving defenseman and kind of the bargain buy there, somebody texted in thoughts on Brännström and Boqvist, and those are a couple of guys who have hit the open market, Erik Brännström and Adam Boqvist, but you could also add Kalen Addison. I think Nils Lundqvist, did he end up getting not qualified by Dallas as well? So a host
right.
of...
So he would be an interesting one.
A host of kind of non-star
I'm not
level,
into Boqvist.
That's fair.
He'll never get on the ice with Rick Tocchet.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting thing, right? Looking at this class of players, it's a lot of them have very high draft pedigree, right?
Yeah.
Or had huge cachet as prospects, haven't quite flipped to being stars. And so when you're a non-star, you know, undersized puck moving defenseman, it can be really, really hard to crack the league. But I do think from that category, we can go through like the guys you find more interesting or not. I do think there's potential for the Canucks to do some business there, right? Solidifying some of the puck moving capabilities, bringing in that depth, and they're all going to be relatively low cost bets. None of those guys are going to get paid big money because of the way, again, that the league views non-star, smaller, undersized puck moving defensemen. But I think there's a potential fit there for the Canucks in that class of players. Brännström, I know, is somebody that interests you a lot.
Well, Brännström's the one of that class of guy. The Boqvist, Pierre-Olivier Joseph, Lundqvist class of player where I actually think there's a path to them being a top four guy still, right? You know, Nick Blankenberg out of Columbus would be sort of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Both guys are like 5'9", 5'10", though, right? So not yep. exactly in the mold of sort of Vancouver's typical stylistic preference on the back end, but... You know, those are two guys who have the intelligence, the work rate, the defensive acumen that I could see leveling up, right? I'm not saying they are going to be Gustav Forsling, but at least I think they have a shot. Whereas, you know, players like Pierre-Olivier Joseph, Boqvist, Lundqvist, I just don't see that defensive feel at the same level. Now, guys figure out defense in their mid-20s sometimes, right?
Yeah.
That does happen. You know, I'd trust Canucks pro scouting staff to have a better feel. I'd certainly trust Rick Tocchet to have a better feel for that than I will when I watch the games. But, you know, for me, Brännström, anyway, when I watch him play, he's really only done it in against softer competition, like in sort of a tertiary role. But you can see it. You can see his understanding of the game, how to use his stick, how to close on forwards' hands. Like, it's evident. He manages the puck responsibly. Like, he does a lot of clever things on the ice that I think give him a shot still, you know, at his age to maybe have some more developmental runway and become a guy who could play against harder competition, play a bigger role on a team. I still think, yeah, that puck mover, not just because I think they do need it, certainly in some matchups, You know, you saw what Edmonton was able to do when Philip Broberg got into their defense corps, right? And it was like, oh, wow, like, man, they're not getting forechecked into oblivion anymore, right? I think having an extra body, an extra player who can help you out on that side of the game, I think that matters. But the it's not just that. It's also that I do think you want to build in some insurance for if you have to play a stretch of games without look, if you have to play a stretch of games without Hughes, like
you're crossing your fingers.
Yeah, you're already in hold on and pray mode. But certainly if you have to play a stretch of games without Hronek, I do think you want to be protective of the Hronek Ethan Bear effect on Hughes's game. You want to have a puck moving type defender that you're able to throw up on that pair and get a similar level of like control and dominance, as opposed to like Hughes can carry anyone, right? Like Hughes will work with Jordy Benn. Hughes will work with Luke Shen. Hughes will work with Noah Juulsen, right? Yeah. Like that'll be fine. But I do think you leave some stuff on the table. I think we've seen that pretty convincingly over the past few years. And I do think setting yourself up so that if you have to make it through for a bit, you have another Quinn Hughes caddy option, I think would be worthwhile. And it looks like there's going to be some affordable ways to place those bets
The
market.
And the text I was reading earlier, Trey the Gulf Island Ferry Worker, asking with the Canucks lack of D signings, do you think management thinks guys like Cole McWard can make the jump into the NHL next season? I think they're open to that, but I also think we're going to see them add to their defensive depth. And I think it makes sense. As much as you want to have that toughness and that size in the lineup, you've covered that off a little bit, right? Now, you have Carson Soucy, you have Tyler Myers, you signed Derek Forbort. Like, that's a big physical blue line already that you've assembled there. I think it makes sense to have some versatility and some different options, especially at the depth level, right? At the, like, 6, 7, 8 level of your defensive depth chart. So I would expect to see, whether it's today, whether it's in the next week, whether it's later in the summer, more defensive signings for the Canucks that can at least compete for spots. And I think it makes sense for at least one of them to be in that puck-moving mold, right? Like, you have the physicality covered. I think you're right. To at least bring in somebody with a different element, a different skill set to balance things out a little bit will make sense. And there are options out there for the Canucks if they do want to do that. 650-650 again is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jen texts in, with today's signings, how much cap space do the Canucks have left? I had him about spending about, I think, 9.25 before Derek Forbort, $1.5 million deal for him. So that would take them up to having spent about 10.75. So somewhere in the neighborhood of like $4.5 to $5 million left over for the Vancouver Canucks at this point. Does that check out rough math for you, Drance?
That sounds right. And then, you know, I think you have to factor in like still need a goalie, still need a backup goalie. It might just be Seelovs.
And on that point, Casey DeSmith signing a 3-year deal with the Dallas Stars. So 3 years, $1 million AAV. So Casey DeSmith getting some security to go be Jake Ottinger's backup with the Dallas Stars. So we knew he wasn't coming back, but that is a backup goalie off the market.
A deal with term was always going to be a non-starter for the Canucks, given their organizational faith in Seelovs, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, when you look at sort of where the Canucks sit here, you know, I mean, they've got so many ways, like, they could flesh out their roster as is now, right? I mean, if DiGiuseppe and Neil Zaman are depth forwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Friedman's your seventh defenseman, and you've got a Juulsen Forbert third pair.
Mm-hmm.
You're really looking at a backup goalie in about 4.75 in functional cap space with just a backup goalie as a need.
Yeah. To kind of like have a credible starting roster on opening night.
Yeah. And that's assuming, of course, that Tucker Poolman begins the season on IR. Now, we all think he will, but you're even positioned now.
You can do it without, like, you can be cap compliant with a full roster without him starting the season on LTIR, which has real benefits.
You're now at a point where you could go into the season, you know, you have 2.25 even without, you know, needing to go into LTI with Poolman. So that positions this club in a very interesting way, right? That positions the club to have a lot of flexibility, a lot of options. And, you know, we'll see sort of what those options actually look like as this team begins to, as the dust settles from the free agent frenzy, because, you know, this club did really well in late August last year, or mid-August, or whenever they signed Pugh Suter.
Yeah.
Pretty late, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Anything in August is super late. So, yeah, it was August for sure. Yeah.
So there's there will be another opportunity to, like, maybe the puck mover comes in that market. But the Canucks can play in that market. They can potentially play with a big trade because Pullman can go on LTI. They could potentially start the season with Pullman not on LTI and just on IR, and toll daily space throughout the season, positioning themselves to add a really big salary at the deadline, especially with how you can use Abbotsford. So, the way that they've spent, the way that they've built out this roster, I mean, I think they'll, you know, be sort of priced out at, like, what, minus 250 to make the playoffs as it stands, and have a ton of options to go in a variety of different ways. I still think you'd love to see them find that big swing, right? Like, I still can't give up the contrast between those teams in this league that have, you know, just the final four teams. Like, let's just take the final four teams from this season, where it's like Panarin, Reinhardt, right? Hyman, and Robertson, right? And I just don't think the Canucks have an answer to that level of star winger, right? And DeBrusque, Garland, Besser, to me, means that all of a sudden we're talking about a team where there's at least three guys that I'd say for sure top six wingers, no question about it. And then they're in with some bets on some other guys with a shot, Hoglander, Joshua, right? Like some other guys who I think could get there potentially if they're not there with confidence yet. That's good. That's good. But that next ceiling raising star level winger, I still think is missing. But there's all sorts of ways that the club could address that in season, positioning yourself to have cap space, positioning yourself to buy value pieces late in the summer. I think there's ways of getting there over the course of the next year, 18 months, 24 months, even if the club wasn't able to land that sort of piece, that transformative offensive attacking piece, today.
Now, I do have some bad news.
Uh-oh.
Michael Amadio.
Where's he signed?
3-year deal. In Ottawa. $2.6 million for 3 years for Michael Amadio.
Why is that bad news?
Well, he's not coming to Vancouver.
Travis Green's going to love that guy.
He was like the official Canucks talk guy of this unrestricted free agency. He's going to Ottawa. Congratulations to Travis Green
Michael Amadio. And how much did he earn?
$2.6 million a year.
So kind of like a higher end Danton Heinen valuation.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think makes sense, but I also do think they're both comparable players. Like As much as Amadio is like stamped clear, my guy in this class, I don't think there's a lot of miles between him and Danton Heinen. I think you can be very happy having added either of those guys for balance. I just like Amadio's size and finishing ability a bit better, so that's sort of why I prefer him. But, you know, by degrees, not by leaps and bounds. And they also got another one of my guys in Kiefer Sherwood. So
there you go.
And Derek Forbort.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, lots of my guys coming to Vancouver. I love it.
By the way, also, we'll take a break here, and we'll see. We'll bring another signing from the Vancouver Canucks. We'll talk to Brendan Batchelor on the other side. By the way, Puckpedia, the successor to Cap Friendly, is reporting that they're expecting Chandler Stephenson to sign with the Seattle Kraken on a 7-year deal. Of course, the Kraken also signed Brandon Montour earlier in the day on the blue line to a big 7-year, $7 million per season contract. So I haven't seen an AAV out there for Chandler Stephenson, but sounds like he could be going to the Kraken on a big long-term deal. We'll take a break. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Brendan Batchelor next here on a free agency edition of Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here on free agency day around the NHL. We are live from the Kintec studio. text in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. Just to get you caught up around the league, Chandler Stephenson indeed going to the Seattle Kraken. 7-year deal, $6.25 million per season for Chandler Stephenson. So he gets the bag in a big, big way. Going to the Seattle Kraken, their second major addition of the day. All right, we're going to try to connect with Brendan Batchelor, but I think he is otherwise engaged at the moment. So we will continue to break everything down happening around the league. Hopefully we can get Batch on later on the show. We'll also we'll do our best to get some of the Canucks signings on the program as well in the next 90 minutes. We're on until noon today. Bick and Randeep on the People Show will take over from 12 to 3, and then Dan and Sat will wrap things up on Canucks Central. So 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And just to quickly recap what the Canucks have done, Jake DeBrusk, 7-year deal, $5.5 million. Kiefer Sherwood on a 2-year, was it $1.5 million per season, I believe, for Kiefer Sherwood. Danton Heinen, 2-year, $2.25 million deal, forward again. And then Derek Forbort on a 1-year, $1.5 million contract. I did want to look around the league a little bit, and specifically around the Western Conference, at some of the things that have happened so far. We can start with the Seattle Kraken, of course, Pacific Division rival for the Vancouver Canucks. As I mentioned, they signed Brandon Montour, one of the highest profile defensemen on the market, to a 7-year deal, and also Chandler Stephenson to a 7-year deal. And Seattle is such an interesting team. You know, this is a team that I think we could all agree needed an influx of talent, is trying to still kind of find their place in the Seattle sporting landscape, and they've taken two big swings here. The Stephenson one in particular, I have big concerns about how that's going to age. big concerns.
Yeah,
but Seattle taking a big swing here.
You'd rather do the DeBrusk deal. Now, DeBrusk's profile, right, is relatively high hit rate, gets hit a fair bit, right? Mm. I often talk about that as something that I look for. Just like I look for a player's career hit rate and how frequently they're hit as just a proxy for how demanding physically their day-to-day is, right? Like, I sort of think about it as like running backs in the NFL, right? Like, we all know running backs, yep, by the time a running back's like 27, people are like, they're ancient. They've been in the league for 2 years, you know, because it's a physically demanding game. It's a collision sport. And so Stephenson has less of that in his profile, but Stephenson's 2 years older, and there were already some signs that some of the speed, right, that's so critical to the way he wins at the NHL level, like, already began to fall off a bit this past year. There's no such signs with DeBrusk. So I'd way prefer to have DeBrusk,
yeah,
you know, at that cap number for that many years than Stephenson, as an example.
Stephenson's 2 years older too, right? So he's already 30. So you're signing him, again, a guy who is speed dependent, who you could see the signs of decline already creeping in for. That is a long, long-term deal for Chandler Stephenson in Seattle. Edmonton, a deal I really like, signing Victor Arvidsson, who, of course, has battled injury problems.
That's an awesome
2-year deal, $4 million for Victor Arvidsson. Reports that they might be in on Jeff Skinner as well, although that's unconfirmed, or at least it's he hasn't signed anywhere yet, so maybe Jeff Skinner in Edmonton as well, but we'll wait and see what develops on that one. Elsewhere in the Pacific Division, L.A., bit of a curious one for me so far for LA. They signed Joel Edmondson, 4-year deal, $3.8 million, and Warren Fogle, a 3-year deal, $3.5 million.
I don't like either of those deals. I do, however, like Fogle's overall speed, right? Like, I think he'll be a nice add,
yep,
but that's a lot of money and a lot of term for a guy that I sort of rate as a bottom six forward.
All right, we couldn't get Batch on the line, but we actually got somebody way better, way more exciting than Brendan Batchelor, live from Rogers Arena, from Sportsnet. He is Dan Murphy. Murph, what's going on, man?
More hair than Brendan, too. if we're keeping track.
Do we, I don't. I
we're
don't,
not. We not on this
to,
program.
We don't want to start listing all the ways that you surpass Batch. We'll be here for a long time.
No, and also this is the official program of Team Play Bald Murph.
That's not
Come
true.
On.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
I've got a beautiful
I got a super high and tight haircut, so I'm coming down now.
We've seen you. You look good. A little 5 o'clock shadow too. Looking sharp on the television today, Murph.
Well, it's the first time in a while. You know, it seems like forever since Game 7 of that Oilers series.
Yeah, you got to show off your rugged, good summer looks. What's your reaction to some of the news that the Canucks have conducted today?
You know, to me, it kind of seems like typical Alvin and Rutherford fashion. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think they've overpaid for anyone. You know, let's start just with some of the depth guys. You know, Danton Heinen can play up and down your lineup. He's got good speed. He can penalty kill. He's a real good utility guy. At 2.25 and not much term is good. I think Forbert, we're just saying basically he's your Ian Cole replacement, but at cheaper, considering what Cole just got. Kiefer Sherwood, again, can play physical. He's not the tallest, but I think he's around 200 pounds. Hits everything in sight, good speed. And then, you know, the big deal, they needed to find someone, a top six winger. And when I see what Chandler Stephenson got, I know he's a centerman, but I got to think the Canucks got far more value out of Jake DeBrusk than the Kraken are getting out of Chandler Stephenson. He's 27. He's scored 20, I think, four times in his career. You know, I kind of like the signing. Well, once we knew that that Gensel was not going to be coming here and they weren't going to really big game hunt, they had to look and see if they could get someone more in that middle range. And, you know, I don't mind the signing. Like, people are going to say 7 years, and I agree. Like, 7 years is tough to give out the max term. But at that dollar amount, I think that, once again, they've kind of, you know, they haven't made, like, the big splashy moves or the big money moves, but I think they've handled business fairly well so far.
And I think term has really been one of the themes of the day around the NHL, right? Like, you know, like Chris Tanev, and congratulations to him, but at his age, got the 6-year deal, right? Chandler Stephenson, he's 30 already, 7-year deal. It feels like pretty much if you were going to get a player you really wanted, you know, add a year or maybe two onto whatever fans were kind of hoping the deal would come into before the market opened today.
Yeah, totally. And it is a silly season. I mean, OEL went from buyout to a Stanley Cup to now a 4-year contract, right? Like, and the one thing I'll say about Tanev and the Leafs, like, you know, that contract could crater. But I think that Treliving's probably signed that saying, I'd love to get a good 4 years of Tanev. Mm-hmm. I'd take 3 good years. You know, I need 3 good years, but maybe the last 2 years of that, they're like, we need this player. We need a right hand. Top 4 defenseman. We've never had one to play with Morgan Riley. If we're going to contend with the pieces we have now, whether that includes Marner or not, we need to overpay for this player, right? I mean, it's just a fact of the nature. So I think that's at least they targeted the piece they really needed to overpay. Some of the other ones are a little bit curious to me.
We've seen that this club tends to be pretty disciplined on sort of that glue guy tier, and I think that even applied to most of their own UFAs. But they're clearly willing to swing big on, you know, the Hronek or DeBrusk, right? The player who's at the right stage, the right age, and clearly that they think because of fit and skill set can maybe be more for them than they have been previously. How do you sort of handicap DeBrusk's chances of coming into Vancouver and doing more for the Canucks than he did in Boston?
Well, I mean, I think playing next to someone like Elias Pettersson and gives him right away a puncher's chance of doing that right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're the same camp, Thomas, that, you know, obviously Pettersson's second half wasn't great and he wasn't great in the playoffs, but I'm not punting on this guy yet. He's just about to go into year one of this massive contract. I think there's a tremendous amount of skill, and I think there is a tremendous amount of will from this player. He doesn't seem to be a guy to me that's going to sit on the sidelines and not try to improve. So I think that just if you're giving DeBrusk, you know, a spot on Pettersson's wing, well, I think for sure he can outperform what he did in Boston. I mean, when Cassidy was there, there clearly were butting heads. I mean, he wanted out at one point until a coaching change was made. He had a really solid season last year. I think he had 11 points in 13 playoff games, scored a couple of big goals for them in the playoffs. So I think there's room for improvement with this player, and he's at that age too. Like, we know now that the aging curves are once you're getting into your late 20s, that's kind of heading out of your prime, unlike what people used to think. But there's still some very good years left for this guy at this age, 27. You're not paying a guy who's 30 or 31 the 6 or 7 year contract.
Another guy that came over from the Boston Bruins, of course, local product Danton Heinen in the 2 year deal. And we've heard his name in connection with the Canucks before. And, you know, now it becomes official. And for Danton Heinen, you know, a guy who can do a lot of different things well, how important specifically is his ability on the penalty kill going to be for the Canucks, Murph?
Well, I think once they lost to Mikheyev, moved on from Mikheyev, I mean, I think we knew that, and Lindholm, for that matter, you needed some penalty-killing forwards. And I think they would have been absolutely crushed if they couldn't have got Dakota Joshua re-signed. And just imagine, and, you know, Cole's gone. And so I think with Myers back and with Joshua back, at least they could, you know, take a bit of a breath. But they still needed help up front. So I've always kind of, like, watched Heinen because – you know, he was in and out of the lineup in Boston, and then they re-signed him as a UFA, and he never seemed to get his footing, but I thought that this year he had a little more consistency in his game. He's super fast. He can play up and down the lineup. You know, he was playing some top 6 minutes with them this season, and the penalty-killing thing is a big one on this team. So, again, a utility guy. You only gave up 2 years, 2.25, not much money, and you hope that maybe for him – he feels a little more grounded or settled that he's got, you know, he's got some term, he's got a spot that he can fit, and if he can play well enough, I don't think his spot in the lineup will be in question. So it's got to feel good for that player as well.
With what the Canucks are doing here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just who they've kept, right, with all the UFAs that were extended last week, but now, you know, three wingers, all of whom can move, right? All of whom are pretty defensively reliable. None of whom we look at as like Kuzmenko risks. Guys, Rick Tocchet might not play. And then another big-bodied defender. Do you take this as just sort of a doubling down on what worked so well for this past season from this management group?
I think for sure. And I think probably they have, you know, they have the way they want to play. We certainly know this is the style the coach wants to play. And with his system, I mean, we've seen it can work. I mean, who would have guessed, what, just over a year ago? Not even a year ago. Who would have guessed last September? Heck, after three games into October,
That
Tyler Myers would sign a three-year extension with this team, this offseason.
And that people would be saying it was great value relative to the rest of the deals we're seeing on the market.
Right, and I think a lot of that has to do with the system in place, right? He knows where he's supposed to be. There's no guessing. And that made him a very reliable defender this year, especially when he was on that pairing with Soucy, when Soucy was healthy. So I think that they should double down on that. I think it worked out very well for them. I think what we saw in the second half, at least, is that it wasn't defensively where they needed help. It was more offense is where they needed the help. That's kind of what dried up on the power play. And DeBrusk is a good bet to give them that. And I think that, you know, you could probably pencil in 15 goals for Heinen as well. So I think they have doubled down, and I think that's absolutely the right choice, at least from what we saw in year one.
Zooming out from the Canucks and just sort of around the league as you've been reacting and seeing these deals in real time, you know, my favorite part of free agency, Murph, is to see the contracts come in and point and laugh. What? Hey, and by the way, make no mistake, that's happening in every hockey operations office across North America right now. What deal has come across that you've looked at and just thought immediately, like, oh boy, hoo-hoo?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I
maybe you didn't sound like Mario when you did it. Sorry.
No. Well, the Stevenson one that just came across, I was like, okay, that one seemed a little rich.
Yeah.
Like, I think the time to buy on this guy was, you know, 2-3 seasons ago, right? When he was really starting to show himself as a real good value. You know, what other ones am I looking at here? Like, some of the defensemen that get paid are like Edmondson getting the money he got.
That's my pick.
That's in LA. I think that's one. And then I'm not going to, like, listen, I would have loved to have seen Mikita Zadorov stick around in Vancouver. And I think probably the Canucks got fairly close to what he got in Boston. I'm not sure about the term, but the money was probably pretty close in terms of yearly AAV. But those are two contracts they signed there in Boston that, with Lindholm, and I think you got what it was, a 7x7 was a rumored deal here.
Yep.
So those are two that listen. I mean, one's guy's a former Selke winner. We know how heavy he plays, how hard he plays. But I don't know if he's more than a 50-60 point guy now. And Zadorov in Vancouver would have been still your third pair lefty. I think you can say that the bottom two pairs are somewhat interchangeable, right? Like, I wouldn't just saddle him as a third pair guy, because I think he brought a lot more than that, especially with offensive abilities, puck carrying abilities. You know, those two contracts, you have to wonder what those will look like in 3-4 years. So I really wish that Zadorov was back. I think selfishly more as a member of the media. I mean, he just brought a lot of joy into the room for us. It's silly season for a reason, although I wouldn't lump those guys in as bad contracts.
Murph, really appreciate it. We'll let you go and get back to your TV gig. Thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, off to England tomorrow. So we'll hopefully stay alive next Saturday in some pub watching the footy game. And hopefully going to a day in Wimbledon in the next few days.
Oh, sick. Not bad.
You're yeah. Making the pilgrimage to Wasp Mecca.
Yes. You got that right. Which is what they call my neighborhood.
Thanks, Murph.
All right, guys. See ya.
Wasp Mecca. I've never quite thought of Wimbledon like that, but you might be onto something there. It's like everyone's got to go once.
100%. Well, I mean, I could keep going, but I'll get in trouble.
Wasp Mecca, that's fantastic. Shout out to Dan Murphy for coming on here with us.
For putting up with our nonsense.
Yeah, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line.
Sorry, I didn't mean to lump you into that. My nonsense.
Oh, that's fine. I don't care. I thought you were going to say you didn't mean to lump me into the Wasp category. It's like, buddy, I got news for you. I'm as in the category as you can possibly get. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jake DeBrusk, the highest profile, biggest money signing for the Vancouver Canucks so far today. He's going to speak to the media via Zoom at 11. So we'll pick that up here. We'll run it so you can hear from one of the newest Vancouver Canucks.
So let's do a quick look around.
Yeah.
Okay? Because we'll be doing this all summer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not you and me, but like
people.
People. And when on this station.
I will be, just not with you.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm sure we'll get back to it when we renew acquaintances next year. But we're only an hour and a half in, 2 hours in to the opening of the market. And it's interesting and notable, it seems to me, that Vegas has been quiet.
Yep.
And they're sitting still on 6.5. They still have the ability to make some noise here. They don't have a lot of like obvious needs.
They're running out of targets too.
They're running out of targets. They're out on Marchessault.
Mm-hmm.
They lost Stevenson, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they did some serious shopping to reinforce their roster. They lost Amadio. Oh, good luck overcoming that. They did some serious shopping, obviously, at the deadline. But, you know, I think we look at the Vegas Golden Knights right now and would say they've gotten slightly worse than they were when the day opened, and they haven't brought in the sort of player that would change that. I think we look at Edmonton, and the Arvidsson ad feels big to me.
Yes.
Like, I think Edmonton got scarier, but it's not like they brought in a goalie.
No, and it's not as if, like, Arvidsson, I think, is a really good pickup for them. There is risk there, but also, like, Edmonton didn't have to do anything to be a lock for the playoffs next year. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, yeah, Edmonton's going to challenge for the division and be a lock for the playoffs with or without Arvidsson.
Well, and you know, they have effectively like $7 million left in space, but a lot of that's probably going to Holloway and Broberg, especially if they're going to try and buy years for those guys. You know, I think they could maybe add a lottery ticket or two back end forward, something like that. I still think you'd love to find them, like, if they're, from their perspective, I still think you'd love to find another guy who can maybe play in your top four. They signed Josh Brown for 3 years at $1 million, variable, but nonetheless. I still think you'd look at Edmonton and say that scary team got better.
Yep.
Right?
I think that's fair.
I think with the Canucks. Now, here's where it's sort of interesting. Lindholm and Josh and Zadorov out.
Mm-hmm.
DeBrusk,
Heinen,
Sherwood,
Forbort.
And Forbort in. Yeah. Well, because it's also like Lafferty, Mikheyev out. Did the Canucks raise their ceiling? I think if you frame it that way, it's probably no.
Mm-hmm.
But did the Canucks get better? I don't know. I think you can make the argument.
I think
either
they maintained
way.
At the very least. Okay. They maintained. Like
I agree
like people
you.
Are some people are texting in like they're worse today than the team that lost in the
you know
second
what?
Round.
I agree with you that they maintained, but
yeah.
but there's an argument to be made against it. I certainly think losing Zadorov and losing that secondary puck moving presence on the back end looms large in my thinking about this team and their ability to generate offense. And then you could argue, especially given the way that this team's defensive results spiked after the Lindholm acquisition, right? That they don't have, you know, the center who's going to win 70% of his draws despite taking a lot of them shorthanded in the defensive zone. He really helped the penalty kill level up, which was a weakness for this team for years, even though they were closer to average for most of this year. You know, I think at least you can argue that in some ways there's still areas where this team's going to need to be creative in filling in the gaps to maintain.
Yeah, I think a lot of your assessment of this free agency period is going to come down to your evaluation of Lindholm and Zadorov. And I think I'm probably lower on Lindholm than a lot of Canucks fans, despite the utility you were just listing there. So that makes it easier for me to look at and say, well, I think they've at least maintained than people who really fell in love with Lindholm, understandably, for what he did in the playoffs and are looking at it as a really major loss.
Yeah, I mean, he was their leading scorer in the Edmonton series.
Yep.
I tend to be pretty close to your opinion in terms of Lindholm's offensive impact, but I definitely think his defensive game is still top of the line, like not just top of the lineup quality, but like top of the league quality. The relentless pursuit, the way that he just closes, takes away space, his ability to defend and run interference without being penalized, and the penalty killing in particular. I think all of that's high end. So I think some of the defensive spine robustness of this forward group, I don't think it's like, I wouldn't even use a word like diminished, but it's just like there's like some slivers removed from what had emerged as a real strength for them. And then on the other side, I do worry about that secondary puck movement. So they've maintained anyway.
I would say that right now, the biggest concern for me just looking at it is a third pair of Derek Forbort and Noah Juulsen. Like that feels like the clear thing where you have to either upgrade or find meaningful options for competition. At some point,
just someone who's a more dynamic skater, I think, is essential because, you know, you want. I like that the Canucks have bet on the wildly clear identity they forged in Rick Tocchet's first full season. I think that's sensible. But I there's a difference between wisely betting on like your ability to get more out of DeBrusque and Heinen than other teams, and Forbort too. And then being like, well, our defensive system helped Myers and Soucy and Zadorov so much that we can make do with a Forbort Juulsen third pair, right? Like that to me is almost like taking what is a good part of how the Canucks have approached this offseason and maybe taking it to an extreme
that's a little too far.
And maybe not. Maybe they're right, but it's just a step too far for me to like rubber stamp as being like, good bet.
Okay, we'll take a break here. We expect to hear from Jake DeBrus speaking to the media via Zoom on the other side. We will carry that live here on Sportsnet 650.
We're going
to
carry it live, and then Jake's going to join our show afterwards.
All right, perfect. So lots of Jake DeBrus content coming up here next on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.